Gracias a la vida que me ha dado tanto, me dio dos luceros que cuando los abro perfecto distingo lo negro del blanco, y en el alto cielo su fondo estrellado. En las multitudes el hombre que yo amo.
Inicial. He ido bajo Helios, que mi mira sangrante, laborando en silencio mis jardines ausentes. Mi voz será la misma del sembrador que cante, cuando bote a los surcos siembras de pulpa ardiente. Cierro, cierro los labios, pero en rosas tremantes se desata mi voz, como el agua en la fuente. ¿Qué si no son pomposas? ¿Qué si no son fragrantes? Son las primeras rosas, hermano caminante, de mi desconsolado jardín adolescente. Beginning. Emerging under Helios, who sees me bleed, I labor silently in my absent gardens. My voice will be that of the sower of seed who sings as he casts among the sowed furrows of burning pulp. I close my lips, but in trembling roses, my voice breaks loose like water in the fountain. If they're not pompous, if they're not fragrant, they're the first roses, fellow traveler, of my inconsolable adolescent garden.
From the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, Pacifica Radio, welcome to Poets Cafe. William O'Daly has translated 9 books of the late career and posthumous poetry of Chilean Nobel laureate Pablo Neruda, and most recently, Neruda's first volume, Book of Twilight, all published by Copper Canyon Press. William's books of poems include The Whale in the Web, also published by Copper Canyon, as well as The Road to Isla Negra, Waterways, a collaboration with J.S. Graustein, and Yarrow and Smoke in 2018, the latter three published by Folded Word Press. A National Endowment for the Arts Fellow, William was a finalist for the Quill Award in Poetry and was profiled by Mike Leonard for The Today Show. His poems, translations, essays, and reviews have been published in numerous journals and as part of multimedia exhibits and performances. A co-founder of Copper Canyon Press, he has received national and regional honors for literary editing and instructional design, and was a national board member of Poets Against War. Welcome, Bill. So glad to have you back in the cafe.
Great to be here, Lois. Thank you.
Yeah, the last time you were here, we were honoring your translation of Neruda's World's End, the penultimate collection. And today brings you back to the beginning with Neruda's Juvenilia poems, and translated by, as I mentioned in the introduction, Book of Twilight, which I'm holding in my hands. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. Listening to you, first of all, read the Spanish and the English, very interesting to hear the music, and thinking about how you might have approached that. How were you able to prepare for Neruda's beginnings? Did your previous work help you kind of enter into that?
Well, it really did, Lois. I first looked at this book, oh gosh, as far back as 1978 or 9, and thought about it, including it in the original series, the first 6 books, the late and posthumous work, and not making it the late and posthumous work. As I looked at the book, you know, it's endowed with modernismo, and that's, you know, there's some play with punctuation and grammar, although it's not tricked out. Neruda was never tricked out. Mm-hmm. But I still felt it wasn't really part of the family that, you know, I was most interested in. But I also didn't really feel as though I had the chops to do it yet.
Mm-hmm.
I was too old. And so having done the late and posthumous work, or a good deal of it, those 8 books, I took a look again after the executive editor at Copper Canyon, Michael Wiegers, suggested that I might translate it. Would I be interested? And I thought long and hard about it, and a few things. One, I kind of did feel as though I was going backward in terms of my maturity. I was feeling younger. I was feeling good and feeling prepared with having done the late and posthumous work. And so I could feel the book. I finally could feel it. And that allowed me to get into the music, to deal with punctuation and the grammar that was a little off-center with good purpose. And I fell in love with the book, really for the first time, and realized the budding genius, the qualities that were emanating from it.
After a whole lifetime, you've devoted 40-plus years of your life to translating Neruda. What were some of the things that stood out for you in his earliest works? Something, you know, maybe that you didn't even anticipate, like, oh, wow. He was doing that then.
Well, I think the most remarkable thing for me, and I would like to see in more first books, is he really sketched out for himself what he valued. He was so connected to that. And having come from the south of Chile, Temuco, the frontier, you know, edge of Mapuche territory, he had seen a lot of poverty. He had heard the Mapuche language day in and day out. He had absorbed a lot of their pain. He had his own. He was a sickly child. And those beginnings really made him, at least within, chart what he cared about. And to see it emerge in his first book, poem after poem after poem, and have all the seeds, you know, the seeds of the love poet, the seeds of the political poet, even though politics only pops its head up above the surface here and there in the book, made me feel as though I was connected to Neruda in a way that I always had been, but at the root.
Beautiful. Yeah. Certainly in the process of writing the book, he was also taking classes for French. And he was going to be a French teacher, right?
Yes.
Oh, we missed out on that.
We missed out. Maybe he did too.
And I loved, by the way, the introduction is just so beautifully written to the collection as well, and very informative. And I loved knowing that he also connected with Éluard, because that was my first love in poetry. So he was really a fan of surrealism early on.
Oh, yes. As Éluard, surrealism rooted in humanity.
Yes.
And that's why he gravitated to Éluard above all others, other surrealists.
Do you know his Liberté?
Yes.
I do. Yeah. And for our listeners, that is a poem written by Paul Éluard during World War II. And it's a beautiful sort of a anthem to the city, you know, an anthem to the idea of liberty, and it was dropped from the plane all over the city.
Yes.
Very dramatic. So he has my vote on that. How about if we get back a little bit into the book, and then we can talk a little more about him?
Sure.
Farewell?
That would be good. Here is Neruda the love poet. He did very, very well with the ladies in Santiago when he got there, and being consumptive looking and very tall, very, very thin, very pale. His friends were absolutely convinced that he did so well with the young ladies because of his poetry.
That's right. Guys, if you got the poems, you're going to get the ladies.
You're going to get the ladies. Farewell. From the depth of you and kneeling, a sad boy like me watches us. For that life that will burn in his veins, our lives would have to bind together. For those hands, daughters of your hands, these hands of mine would have to kill. Through his eyes open on the earth, I someday will see in your eyes tears. That, my beloved, I don't want. So that nothing binds us, nothing brings us together. Not the word that scented your mouth, nor what the words did not say. Not the feast of love we did not share, or your sobbing by the window. I love the love of the sailors who kiss and leave. They leave a promise, they never return. In every port a woman waits, the sailors kiss and go away. A knight lies down with death in the bed of the sea. I love the love that spreads in kisses, bed, and bread. Love that can be eternal and can be fleeting. Love that wants to be free to love again. Godly love that approaches. Godly love that leaves. No longer will my eyes savor your eyes. No longer will my pain grow sweeter beside you. But wherever I go, I will take your gaze. Wherever you walk, you will take my pain. I was yours, you were mine. What more? Together we took a bend in the road where the love happened. I was yours, you were mine. You'll be of him who loves you, who cuts in your garden what I have sown. I leave. I am sad, but I am always sad. I come from your arms. I don't know where I go. From your heart, a boy says goodbye to me, and I say goodbye to him.
If you're just tuning in, this is host Lois P. Jones with our wonderful guest, William O'Daly, reading from his latest translation, Paulo Neruda's Book of Twilight, out on Copper Canyon Press, and it is a beauty. If you love Neruda, you'll love this too. It's his early works, and he's really so present as Neruda here. This poem has so much going on, and he gets you, a knight lies down with death in the bed of the sea. You know, that's like such a, you could see him happening there, the early Neruda and that kind of contrast that he's able to make, the tension he's able to make in a line. I love this poem. And this poem became already immediately kind of famous, right? People were reciting it in the streets. And
that's right. Especially like on a Saturday night, you'd hear young people reciting passages, you know, a few lines here and there from the poem on the streets of Santiago.
Right. And Neruda was how old when he wrote this approximately?
Probably the earliest poems were written when he was 16, 17. Yeah. He published the book when he was 19.
He sold some things to do that, right? He sold his watch.
Nearly everything. The deal was, in those days in Chile, your first book would be accepted in a completely legitimate way. And Claridad of University of Chile, Santiago, was the publisher. Mm-hmm. Well, they accepted the book. And then, but in those days, you had to pay for your printing.
Wow. Even in those days, the poets were paying.
Oh, that's, absolutely.
That's sad. No wonder he was so sad. No, I'm just kidding.
Hard to put 2 cents together, you know. But he sold the watch that his father gave him as a parting gift from Temuco. He sold his furniture. He got some help from, oddly enough, a right-wing literary critic, De Roca, and who later savaged him in print,
right,
but helped pay for the printing of the book.
I'll get him out there so I can savage him.
Yeah, pretty much. And Derek hated 20 love poems.
Oh.
And so it finally came out. He had to pay for the printing of every copy before the printer would release the book.
Oh, my goodness.
And but then it became popular rather quickly.
Yeah. They said, this guy's hot. And, you know, what an acknowledgement of his power that people were reciting his words in the streets already. He was connected to the people in different ways. As you did the translation, knowing that he, Gabriela Mistral, was a mentor of sorts of his or someone who deeply inspired him, could you pick up on those aspects? Did you see it in the work? Or, I don't know, that's a hard question to answer, but It feels in some ways there's kind of a narrative aspect to it. Like he really changed. Certainly his expression of religion changed because he mentions God a lot in this first volume. And then later on in his life, what happens? You know, he goes away from that.
Well, Mistral mainly encouraged him to read certain authors. That was her biggest contribution, in addition to the encouragement.
Mm-hmm.
She saw very little of his poetry.
Oh, okay.
Which has surprised me. But
yeah.
She really didn't, you know, there wasn't a lot of critiquing of poetry like that. It was really more high level. You know, you should be reading Verlaine. You should read, you know, read more Baudelaire,
right.
Dostoevsky, Proust,
uh-huh.
And so that darkness that's in this book and that's in a lot of his work is really of the south of Chile. Those rainy days with the rain falling on the roof, you know, a sickly kid in his room hearing that day after day after day.
Mm-hmm.
And he was also, you know, very connected, as I mentioned, to the poverty of the region. And there, so, you know, he would go back and forth. He was kind of a melancholy kid, but he had great joy in him as well,
mm-hmm.
and lots of love and affection.
Mm-hmm.
And always searching for that mother who died two mm-hmm. months into his life.
Mm-hmm.
So there was interesting things that happened there. Mistral, you know, she encouraged him to go to Santiago because, you know, go to a cultural center. Well, that was Santiago in Chile in those days.
Right.
And then in terms of the religious aspect, you know, he really didn't have a lot of that in his childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's in a sense playing with God. What is this notion of God?
Okay.
And how are we a part of that? Later in his life, he resolved himself to becoming, I think, probably most accurately, an agnostic,
mm-hmm.
I would say.
Okay.
And so he really stopped dealing with all of that, except in certain books like The Separate Rose, where he's dealing with the mythological aspect of Easter Island.
And right.
Those sort of passages in his life.
How about if we go back to, I mean, speaking to his connection with the people and their struggles, there's a great poem called Night Armory that speaks to that.
It does. Night armory. Black iron that sleeps. Black iron that groans from every pore. A shout of grief. The burnt ashes over the sad land. The broths in which the bronze melted its pain. Birds from what unfortunate, faraway country. Caught in the painful night with no end. And the shriek made me stiffen like a coiled nerve, or like the broken string of a violin. Each machine keeps a pupil open, looking at me. On the walls hang the questions. The soul of the bronzes blooms in the double-beaked anvil, and there is a tremor of footsteps in the deserted rooms. And in the black night, desperate, run and sob the souls of the dead workers.
Wow, that's very powerful. This is host Lois B. Jones, if you're just tuning in. I'm here with our guest, William O'Daly. He's reading from Pablo Neruda's Book of Twilight, published by Copper Canyon Press. And he's just read an amazing poem, Night Armory. And it speaks to the oppression that was already occurring at that time, the oligarchy, this kind of terrible epoch that was building in the city.
Yes, when he got to Santiago, there had been, this we're talking 1920-21, there had been a number of riots, protests where workers and students would band together and try and stand up for their rights. And the oligarchy was the de facto system within Chile,
mm-hmm.
and it had been struggling to try and free itself and create a true middle class for that stability and that hope. So instead of going to the Pedagogical Institute every day to take his classes, you know, to become a teacher of French, which I'm sure he would have made a very good one, he would go to the University of Chile and listen to anarchist speeches.
Mm-hmm.
and therefore his father cut off his allowance.
Oh, really?
Yes.
But that didn't stop him, of course.
Oh, no. He just became poorer. But
poor,
unstoppable.
And rich in his poetry, of course, and rich in the love of the people mm-hmm. over time, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, how many poets can claim that kind of influence on an entire nation?
Very few, and usually a nation has one or two within any span of 50 to 100 years. People, you know, Akhmatova in Russia.
Right.
And so, but he, it was his music and his, the groundedness in his poetry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a poeta del pueblo, poet of the people. And that's how he was known, even though the workers, often illiterate, would love to listen to his love poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And those on the right wing would, when I was in Chile in 2008,
mm-hmm.
I met with several, and they would sometimes even defend the Pinochet regime and the brutality of it.
Mm.
And then curse Neruda for being a communist and part belonged to the Communist Party, and then say, but...
But
my wife and I are together now because I read her two poems of Neruda and she agreed to marry me. So I will be ever thankful to him for that.
For that, right. You know, poetry still has the power to unite people. I mean, even in our fractured age, I think, it's certainly raising awareness in any event.
It is. And there's some evidence, the NEA has published some evidence that poetry might be having a resurgence in the United States. It's been in decline for 20 years.
23 or 28 million people are reading poetry. I read that.
Yeah.
That's very heartening, isn't it?
It certainly is.
And with a book like this, I mean, Neruda is forever. He has an eternal aspect. He's somebody that's there's a classic element to his work that you want to go back to again and again. And I bet as a translator, you, in rereading some of his work, you must have new views on it as you go back and look at work maybe that you've done before or, you know, you get a different perspective on it.
That's very true, Lois. And it's like almost any viable poem. His work, his originals, and my translations even of them, I find new things.
Mm-hmm.
I go back a few years later, I pick up World's End or The Hands of Day, which are the two most recent Before Twilight, and I didn't see that.
Mm.
Here, I'm bringing it over.
Yeah.
You know, so what it speaks to is when you write a poem in translation, what you're doing is bringing the poem across more than the words, though that fidelity to the words is important to the poem. So that's the dialogue as a translator. But if you don't bring the poem, two things happen. You don't have a poem in translation, and you won't stop discovering these things that are so delightful to discover when we go back a year later, 6 months later, 10 years later mm-hmm. to the poems we love.
So when you say the poem, you mean like the essence?
The essence.
Right.
Yes.
Bill, I can't believe how quickly this half hour is gone. We can talk forever about Neruda, but can you take us out with this poem, with the last poem?
I'd be delighted to. He would sit, when he first got to Chile, he had a little tiny apartment on Maury Street, and he was so poor, his entertainment was watching the sunset every night from his tiny balcony, looking west. Evening over the tile roofs. Evening over the tile roofs falls and falls. Who gave it so it would come, bird wings? In this silence that fills everything, from what country of stars did it come alone? And why did this mist, trembling bud, kiss of rain, sensitive, fall in silence and forever over my life?
Thank you for coming into the studio, Paul. So glad to have you here. This is host Lois P. Jones, and our guest has been William O'Daly. Thanks to our producer, Marlena Bond. Look for us on the Poets Cafe fan page on Facebook. You've been listening to Poets Cafe on Pacifica Radio for all of Southern California and beyond.
Mo canto y el canto de todos que es mi propio canto. Gracias a la vida que me ha dado.